It is 24 and a half minutes after the hour. In case you've got some place to go, maybe an appointed time. It's Don Clark's appointed time, though. Dr. Don joined us about this time every Tuesday morning from Garden Valley, Texas. Don is a biochemist, a member of the Board of Creation Moments, and a good friend of the station, the only authorized, real, honest-to-goodness scientist that we have on staff here. We say on staff, but we don't pay him. We figure that he gets so much pleasure out of these conversations that he just does it every week, voluntarily, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
That's right. But, you know, if you wanted to send a check my way, that would be fine.
All right. Well, we'll set it up to the board and see what they have to say here.
Keep trying for that, Don.
Yeah, it was worth a shot, Don. It really was.
We all get paid so well. I understand.
Mm-hmm. I got a 30% raise last year.
Yeah.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Or was it 40? I forget.
Well, when you see a check, you'll figure that out probably.
I'll have to. When that day comes. Well, when the check came in, I couldn't find my computer. I couldn't find my calculator, so I didn't really know there was no way to check.
Well,
I know.
Okay. This is the way of bashing management here at the station. We're used to that. We're enduring it.
Yeah, and you know, now I'll have to wait for the next one because I signed that one and filed it.
Mm-hmm. What's that joke about when the Vikings win the Super Bowl? Yeah. We've been talking about two different topics for today's conversation. Don usually brings us the scientific perspective on the biblical timeline, the biblical story of creation. And that is incredibly enlightening. I remember going back to our series in Genesis just earlier this year. It took us, I don't know, 8-10 weeks to get. There's more packed into that than ever we suspected here. It was delightful. Today, I have a question about animal species, though. There's an article over at Live Science which asked the question, what is the average lifespan of a species? Now, can species, what species? Species singular or species? How does that word work, Don?
Oh, well, a species is anything that they define as being a different species, but in the creation world, of course, God created different kinds. And so there's a big difference between a species and a kind.
Now, a kind, we would think of it kind of like equivalent to a race, right? I mean, like a human race, the human kind, same thing. It's on that same level, right?
I mean, you could, in the broad sense, you could think of the humankind, all humans, as a kind. Obviously, we're different than animals in that we are made in his image. Mm-hmm. No other animal is made in God's image. But if you look at the different races, you could say one could loosely say, well, that's a different race, so it's a different species.
And loosely, we've done exactly that, haven't we?
We have done that, yes.
Yeah.
And that's the same thing article's talking about here. So a species, for example, it could be a particular kind of fish. Different depending on where it is in the world and the environment it is. Maybe it's changed into slightly different colors. For example, you've got different color trout. You've got the rainbow trout and various other types of trout, but they're all trout. And same thing with apples. So you've got all kinds of different apples. You've got granny apples and Macintosh and all of these different types, different kinds, different species of apples, but they're bottom line is they're all apples.
All the same core DNA, just minor changes down the line, right?
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. And those minor changes may have been due to environmental changes that change the way the animal either looks, or it could have gotten, one species, for example, could have gotten separated, or one kind the species could have gotten separated.
And here's an important point that you made for several times, is that ability to change and adapt to environment was something that God built right in. It's not as if there was a set DNA and the temperature changed or the moisture level changed or something else, food supply changed, and so the animal changed to adapt. They could only change because they were unable to do so from the very beginning. In other words, there was DNA present that sensed the change and altered the creature.
Yes, that's correct. Not the environment meant, not the environment altering the DNA, you know, per se. The information was there, you know, from the very beginning. And we can certainly breed out certain characteristics, as we've done quite nicely with dogs and with cats, for example, and sheep. But that's selective breeding. You know, you see a trait that you like, and then you want to keep that, so you gather up all of the animals of that type that you want to keep that trait, and you start inbreeding, if you will, and now that trait is dominant within that species of dog, for example, or whatever it happens to be. Well, so this article talks about species, and it doesn't talk about kinds. So that's the first thing that we need to bring out. And the article also, is article based on deep time. So it's talking about losing a species, for example, within 1 or 2 million years, that certain periods in our past history, it looks like, based on the fossil record, for example, that's what they're using to base this premise on, that we've had certain five other mass extinction periods in our Earth's history. And lo and behold, it looks like we're going through another one. This is, we could probably call this, as the article does, the sixth mass extinction, in that species are becoming extinct faster than they can adapt to the environmental change.
Is that a reference to climate change?
Yes. As a matter of fact, they reference climate change in this article. So one would get the impression, if you read it with a critical eye, which I tend to do, that, hey, maybe this isn't about species. Maybe this isn't about, you know, mass extinction of various species, but maybe it's supportive information for, upholding that, you see, climate change does exist and we're seeing all these species disappear.
So it's a further indictment of the humankind is what it is.
Yes, and so we better do something about it, otherwise we're going to lose all of our species and we're going to be left here alone.
Well, the basic question is, the headline says, how long do most species last before going extinct? And just a side note here, is species singular or plural? Or is the same word used for both? Can you have a singular species?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know the answer to that.
Okay.
You'd have to ask a biologist or a zoologist.
Well, what's such a number? If you could determine the average age of a lifespan of a species, would it have any meaning at all? Because they say in the article that it's so complicated, they can't seem to settle on it. Included in the complication is that there could have been many species existent who disappeared long ago that we've never seen a sign of. So in computing the average, they would be out of range. We wouldn't know anything about them.
Yeah. They'd be out of the equation. And also, they also mentioned in the article that, lo and behold, there's the insect world. There's more species in the insect world, and we probably only know half of the insects. And so, therefore, you know, this calculation that we're doing is probably irrelevant to them. And so, you know, if you don't know a certain species exists, and this is all, you know, this is all nomenclature. This is all, what makes a different species? It goes back to that question. Well, it's whatever the biologist or the zoologist decide is a different species. I mean, how different does you know, does a fish have to be from its neighbor in order to call it a different species? And, you know, it turns out not very different, you know, as a trout example of the mm-hmm. of the dog example.
Well, if a species goes extinct, is that a tragedy of some kind?
Not necessarily, because the kind is probably still around. Now, we did, you know, I don't think there's any more dinosaurs around, at least not large ones. And so we've lost the giant dinosaurs, but the...
Should we be sad? Should we feel guilty when a species goes extinct?
It depends on what that species did. I mean, like I said, if it's a kind, then now you're losing one of God's created kinds, and that's sad. That's a sad thing, from the point of view that, you know, God created some marvelous animals and things, and so we're kind of losing a little bit of God's creation.
But we don't know that ever happened, do we?
Well, we do know, I think, although we can't search all over the earth, that we have lost some, you know, some, in quote, dinosaurs. And there are many different sizes of dinosaurs. They're not, you know, just the big tyrannosaurs.
So if small ones persist, that means the kind is still with us.
The kind is still with us. And they may not be as big, and they probably aren't as big as they were back then. Because before the flood, the environment on the earth was much more perfect than it is today. And so after the flood, just that massive environmental change, you know, caused a lot of animals, if you will, to go extinct, especially the big, massive dinosaurs, because you didn't have the vegetation, at least initially, that is required to feed those animals.
Okay, here's one for you. God has determined a man's lifespan to be 120 years. That's what's told to us in Genesis. Has he determined a lifespan for other kinds? I suspect not.
That's a good question. Probably
it's a practical question, you know, because everything's in the plan somewhere.
Right. And we, you know, our average lifespan here as a human is not nearly 120 anymore. Moses lived to be 120, and obviously his predecessors lived much longer than that because the environment was, again, more perfect for not only human life, but all types of life. And so if that number is based on a couple of things. One, it's actually written into our DNA that, and we've talked about it before, that we've got telomeres. These are starting places for DNA replication. And when you run out of telomeres, you're not going to replicate anymore, and your life is pretty much over at that point from a biological point of view. But, you know, so is that biological clock designed into every kind of animal? And I would suspect that it is. And so you are only going to live a certain, you know, certain number of years, and then that particular animal is going to die because it can't replicate, the DNA can't replicate anymore, and, you know, we basically just degenerate, and we can't keep up. Our cells can't keep up, and our cells are constantly dying anyway. And so the only thing that's keeping us going is cell replication. And when cell replication stops, then we, you know, our bodies would get used up. Now, we're dying off sooner than 120 years for most people. I mean, you know, I guess the oldest folks are 105, maybe 110. We're approaching 120, but you know, we're not we're falling much shorter than that because of all of the environmental pressures, if you will, of living today as opposed to living closer to the time of the flood, when although the complete surface of the earth was reformed, it was still a better environment than we have today.
A lot of this has to do with the timeline. This article about species assumes millions of years, six different mass extinction events, and a lot of species going extinct in between, some of them because of man's involvement, especially larger animals, they say, disappear. So there's this timeline, but there's an article out now that you just introduced us to about rapid crystal growth. It sounds kind of dry, but it seems to be a basic turnaround, a contradiction of established science again. Tell us about that.
Well, this particular article on the how long do species live is all about deep time, where the other article, which you can find in Institute of Creation Research, is discussing a new study that it was published in Nature Communications that basically says the pegmatites, the igneous rocks called pegmatites. So what is igneous rock? It is basically volcanic rock. Volcanic magma that solidifies into these crystals called pegmatites. Now, the pegmatites they have found some that are like a meter long, which is 3 feet long. So some of these crystals are huge. And so the study that was done is, well, how fast do these things crystallize? And so when they seriously started to look at this, and they were surprised at how fast these crystals grow in the order of days as opposed to, again, thousands or, you know, millions of years, as was previously supposed by the evolutionary geologist or by the geologist. So now we have a study that says, no, they don't take millions of years. Matter of fact, we can grow these crystals in a matter of a few days. Even it looks like those that are as big or as a meter long, 3 feet long, can grow as little as 3 days. And so now you've got a dichotomy. You've got the deep time folks saying that these things are, you know, have grown over long periods of time, but the actual scientific data is showing that no, they grow very, very rapidly. And so that actually supports the creation model that you know, it's a short time period since all of this volcanic activity on the Earth. And as we've spoken about before, the volcanic activity, there was a tremendous amount of volcanic activity that was happening during the time of the flood because the continents were breaking up. Pangaea, the one large continent, was breaking up into the seven major continents that we have today, and those were drifting apart. And as the cracks in the mantle were forming, of course, the magma from underneath was being spewed out in various periods of tremendous volcanic activity. And it was at that time that a lot of these crystals, pegmatites, were being formed. And so here again is another study that supports the creation model, and it does not support the long, deep time evolutionary model. And it seems that the longer that we the more that we study, especially here in geology, the more evidence we find for creation as opposed to deep time evolutionary processes.
It's amazing to me that this deep time notion seems to occur so automatically, like it's the default position of science. And I'm wondering why that should be. Is it because of carbon dating? Is it because of some other dating methodology that says things are so very old that it must have taken, you know, bazillions of years to get to that state? That seems to be a rash assumption to me.
Well, it's a It's an assumption that goes back quite a ways. Actually, it goes back before Darwin's time. In Charles Lyell was a deep time. He was the father of deep time geology.
And he was an attorney, was he not?
I'm not sure about that.
I think he was, and wrote a book that Darwin read, and developed his theories.
Him. So, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, it influenced Darwin, and then of course when he goes to the Galapagos and he sees all these finches with different size beaks, talking about species differentiation. he comes up with the theory of evolution. Well, the guess of evolution. I should use the nomenclature correctly. The guess of evolution, and thereby now we're off and running. And so evolutionists needed the deep time that Lyell was proposing in his writings, in order to justify changes in the DNA and mutations. Of course, they didn't know anything about DNA at that time. The deep time evolved, if you will, and it crept into every aspect of science. And so science latched onto it because, here's an explanation for how we came about without considering a creator. And so we pushed the creator out of the picture, and now we have a naturalistic explanation for where we came from and where the different animals came from and the different species came from that we see on Earth today. And how do we know it's true? Well, because we see all the different animals and the different species that we see today. It's a circular argument. And the real proof is that, no, things didn't take a long time to form geologically, as this study is also showing, but also biologically it doesn't make any sense because the biology is so complex and our DNA is so complex that it couldn't have evolved over, much less millions of years or billions of years. It's just statistically impossible, impossibility so because we, of the
so
number
we,
of DNA.
We can deduce two ideas from this. Two conclusions. One is that at the time, evolution, it seemed like a good idea at the time. And here's something else we can blame, another mistake on attorneys, right?
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
I think we got it wrapped.
Charles Lyell was a geologist.
Well, yeah. He was a part-time geologist. I think you got to go farther to find. There was an attorney in there someplace. There was.
There's no mention of his attorneyism, on the Wikipedia page.
Well, what do they know?
He was not tainted, and species is both plural and singular.
Oh, thank you for that. Oh, that's okay.
You're welcome.
I feel better. Thank you, Google Meister.
I could finally an opening right towards the end.
Well, we'd love to hear from you. I mean, it's
yeah. Don Clark, again, a member of the Board of Creation Moments. I want to mention their website to you, creationmoments.com. It's a library, an archive, a reservoir of information, scientific information that supports the biblical story of creation. There's a lot there for you. You might want to pay them a visit, creationmoments.com. And Don, we'll pay you a visit again in, well, next not next week, though, because I'll be out of town. So the week after, we'll get with you then, and thank you for taking time with us today.
You're bye-bye. Quite welcome.
Have a good week.
See you folks later.
See you in a couple of weeks, Don.